Mr. O'Sullivan relayed. So, could these stories have just been they're trying
could
to?
They could have been rumours, and whether it's actually having an individual or not, but that's what they told us. But there was regular soldiers who were in the Lincolns, you know, nearly all their lives. They'd joined up in the Lincolns. But there was instructors in a way. That's why I said this Lincoln, the six Lincolns was a educational area.
And so, but there was a feeling that there was some kind of sacred device that could push fire up.
Still the same.
Now, you mentioned off the tape a couple of things I'd just like to cover now. You mentioned parcels from home. Could you talk about that?
This was at Lincoln Barracks.
This was back in the barracks.
Back in the barracks at Lincoln.
And I think you also had a story off the tape about a bit of gambling that you got involved in. Maybe if we could just have those two stories.
Well, the gambling. When we were children at home, we played cards. We played Newmarket for pennies and eighties. Father and mother joined in, all of us. When I got in the army, payday at Lincoln Barracks, we couldn't go out because the first 6 weeks we weren't allowed out of barracks. So it was all in, all tied up in the barrack room. So somebody played the cards. We got playing cards, and somebody said, "How about play for money?" Because we all had the money. Well, I'm not bothered. He was running. And we said, I mean, he was only playing for pennies. But I tell you, somebody suggested we play Deuce is Wild. So a deuce was any card you wanted it to be. And this day, this game, and I got. I had two deuces, so I'm bound to have a trial. The next card was a king. Well, there's only one trial can beat a pile of kings, that's a pile of aces. So, and there was maybe about seven or eight of us playing. Getting in. So we come to, there's only two of us in. And I'm looking at me on the hill. I'm bound to win this, I can't lose. But I went back to run out of money, so I had to see the bloke I was playing with. He had two kings and a deuce. And because I'd seen him, if he'd have seen me, I would have won. But I ran out of money first. So he won the lot. I was skint. So I had to rely on my mates to save me through the week. Which they did.
Did that happen to a lot of people?
Oh, yeah. And then...
Did that put you off gambling?
It stopped. I never gambled anymore in the army.
You didn't?
Not for money. I played cards.
But not for money?
Not for money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was like a cautionary experience?
Oh, it was a good experience. Mm-hmm. I was going to stop gambling to give it.
And I think you talked about the parcels and the parcels from home and so on, and one of the sergeant's interest in the parcels.
Sergeant Smith was... He misused his power as a sergeant. And if anybody got a parcel from home, he would deliver it because all the parcels in the post were delivered to the little sergeant and to the little at the end of the big ones where they visited. Whenever the post arrived, if there was a parcel for anybody in our platoon, they would stand there while it was opened. And if there was cakes or sweets, we wanted to share. He didn't ask right out for them, but he made remarks which suggested that he ought to, you know. And this particular, I'd been home on leave, a weekend leave, and I'd left my steel helmet behind. So my mother posted it to me, and this steel helmet arrived in the parcel. And Smithy said, you know, come on then, son, let's have this parcel up and see what we've got. We can be able to get some cake tonight, there's a feel of this. And we don't want to tell them inside was a steel helmet. So we put them in a chance for leaving a really steel helmet at all. But it did really, he overdid it in his being greedy.
Did some people, what would his reaction be if somebody had a cake and they opened it and they didn't give him any, what would he do then?
Well, he would just make their lives miserable.
So he'd be, he'd victimise them for a while afterwards.
Them until someone else came.
So the next time you got a cake.
Yeah, he wasn't killed. Because nearly all the fellas looked in. Yeah, I mean, Johnny Proctor didn't, because I think he did just outside of barracks. But Johnny Proctor kept Sergeant Smith in biscuits and cakes all the time he was at Lincoln Barracks. Because we couldn't go out for 6 weeks. But Johnny Proctor lived directly opposite the barrack gate. I mean, Smith used to give him a pass to the lab. But if he'd have been caught, Smithy would have been in trouble because he still wasn't allowed to have a barracks, even if he did live that near to the... I mean, he actually could have slept at home. He did some nights. But he kept Smithy sweet with sweets. You don't blame him, can you? True, because he could go out of barracks, get into civvies and go down into Lincoln and no one thought out about it.
You've talked about being put on a charge in jankers and so on. Were there any serious discipline incidents, problems in over all this period, you know,
not serious. With the one lad who joined the army, he was only 16, and that's... The sergeants, when he said he took your rifle from you to show how it worked, they wouldn't give it you back, they would throw it at you. They were prevented to test. And this led, I can't think what they called it. The sergeant threw him the rifle, and the venator fixed, and he caught it and he threw it straight back at the sergeant. So the sergeant put him on the chair for being insubordinate and threatening the NCO. But when it come in front of the CO, it came out he was only 16 years of age. So he was dismissed from the army until he was older. He'd won, I think he was the only one in the platoon who volunteered for the army. But they did a lot of silly things, the sergeants and NCOs. They used to say, that gets you used to handling a rifle, you're not frightened of it anymore, I think. But, well, it didn't, I don't know. It seems that incident where the sergeant lady said, the next man you see will be the enemy. And we all chased after him, instead of firing at him. You know, it was so... When you think about it, it's silly, isn't it? Instead of just dropping, just standing still and firing at him. I mean, the rifles were loaded, but nobody had the effort or point of the gun at him. He just chased him.
I should have asked you earlier about the bayonet. You mentioned the bayonet in passing and bayonet practice. And this obviously goes back to Lincoln Barracks. What do you remember about the bayonet, and was it taken seriously in your training?
Yeah.
Could you describe that?
Well, you've seen them on the different films, really. Just a sack of straw pulled up there. You had to make a lot of noise and be vicious with it, and in, out. And if you didn't make a lot of noise, you'd failed.
So what would that be, their procedure as you did this?
You have to be in the file, one day and the other. The rifles were fixed bayonets, and you'd be about from here to that calf in the dummy.
Which is about 30 yards.
About 20 yards.
20 yards, yeah.
And you'd fix bayonets and you'd go like hell, straight in, straight out, and then round the back. But as you went, you shouted, top of your voice. And that was it. I got wounded by that with a bayonet, didn't I?
Could you describe
it? In Lincoln Barracks. The first time we ever went on guard duty, you always went on guard duty with thick bayonets. Thick bayonets and 5 rounds of ammunition in a clip, not in the rifle. And when they changed the guard commander would call the entire guard out into the front of the guard room in single file. I'm stood behind Crow, and Crow's a big tall lad. There's Crow in front of me, Taylor's between me and Crow, and I'm behind him. And I was going on leave on a Friday morning, and this was a Thursday night. I was marching forward. Guard commander said, halt. Everybody stopped but Crow. Crow ran into the log in front of him, dropped his rifle, it hit Taylor's shoulder and come down very close into my foot. So he took me to the hospital. And Crow got put on a charge for it. He was a sinner. I didn't do it on purpose. But he got me excused books later on in life.
What did you feel about the Bayonet practice yourself, you and your fellow recruits?
We thought it was a waste of time. We never thought we would use them. Never.
And did you ever fix bayonets?
Yeah.
In your army? You did later on?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll talk about that
when we get there.
Said,
yeah. No, nothing said to me, but it's in sugar, wasn't it?
So you were with the Six Links until when, do you think?
No, I haven't left them. I joined the Shield Fighters end of November, beginning of December.
Could you just describe that process, how that happened, and what you thought about it at the time?
Well, I thought it was a bit of disgusting, really, because I lost my mates, and, you know, I mean, we didn't all go down to the Shield Fighters. A lot of us did. We went home on leave. We were due for a 7-day leave. We got home maybe Thursday night about 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening. I get up on Friday morning and my mother said, there's a telegram for you. I said, a telegram for me? She said, yeah, you've got to go back to barracks. I said, I haven't. She said, you have? And it said, return to Yarmouth Barracks immediately. Produce at railway station for warrant. That is his telegram. So you didn't have to pay. Because they didn't send a warrant, they just sent a telegram telling us to return.
So you take that to the railway station?
You take it to the railway station and present it to the... I mean, they want a lot of bother and getting onto trains in those days. If you were a soldier, you had to present the... You just had to prove that you had to go back. So we went back to Yarmouth. And when we got there, then he said, Feeney, I'm sorry, gentlemen, but I'm going to lose you. We thought he was moving on somewhere. It was us who was moving on. He was moving to the same 5th Sherwood Foresters.
So how many of you went?
Well, nearly all of the two. But then again, when we got to the Foresters, we were split up again. Mm-hmm.
So there was only, was just your platoon out of the Lincolns that went, or were there other members?
Some more went from other platoons then.
So how many do you reckon in total?
I should say there would be about 90 to join the Foresters.
Did he explain why?
No.
And
they didn't say you'd be going abroad or anything like that, they just said you'd join the same 5th Sherwood.
And did anybody try to complain or to...
Well, no, you never thought of complaining. Nobody thought of complaining. If they said, well, you just obeyed orders, that was it.
And
Army can't work any other way.
And out of the 30 men that were transferred, were you all private soldiers or were
no NCOs transferred?
No NCOs.
The NCOs, which was, as I said, there was all the men, they stuck with the Lincolns, where they were. But did the 6 Lincolns go abroad?
Yeah, I think they did. They were part
did they come to Sedgenay?
They were around there, yeah.
Because there again, which one in Africa?
Well, we'll get on to that, yeah.
But,
Now, so there was 30 of you went at this stage. Was there any, in your earlier time with the Six Links, were there any drafts to other units that you could
have?
So this was completely out of the blue?
Well, yeah. And to go to a different regiment as well, you know, it was because they had the Sherwood Foresters hadn't got the same training as the Lincolns had. I went into a cross-country room with the Sherwood Foresters and beat them all easy. But with the Lincolns, I'll finish in 6th and 7th.
And so that was possibly Captain Feeney's influence.
Yeah, really had us. The Foresters weren't as fit as the Lincolns.
So you got your railway warrant.
Well, you didn't hear it. You showed them the telegram. You returned to return immediately, mm-hmm. And that's it. You just go on the train and come back.
So you were at Yarmouth, and then you were told to go where?
We went to. Went to Orkhurst in Kent. Cambridge in Surrey, isn't it?
And so when do you think you joined the Foresters?
August time.
So it's August. And what was your reception there?
Well, for the start, when we first went there, the Lincolns would come down, stuck together. You know what I mean? We didn't call that one, but we said the ones as fit as us and was always boasting that we were better than them. And I think, on the whole, we were a fitter mob than they were. But they were going into, they were going to school as well, weren't they?
And so you said that there was 30 of you split up.
Yeah, we split up into different companies of them. So.
And can you remember what company of the Foresters you went into?
No, I can't remember.
And can you remember any of your NCOs and officers from this period before you went abroad?
No, I can see them, I can see the faces, and there was one with an elderly bloke. You see, when we say elderly, from that age, 38, 30s, he's old, isn't he? You know what I mean? So he wouldn't be that old, really. But he was, that's where we met Machin. Machin was a lieutenant, and he was our platoon officer. And as I said, he was really a good platoon officer, and he looked after his platoon.
So you got to the Foresters, and Lieutenant Machin was your officer.
Mm.
What about the mix of men in your new platoon?
The age was different. We was 20 years old, some of the older men were 28 and 30, which, and with that much more experience than we had in the army, they'd been in the army longer. Some had been called up, same as well, but they'd gone in from onset of war, sort of thing. Same as my brother was called up straight away, and some of them then were taught as well. Whereas we had to wait when I was 18 before we were called up. So some of them had 2 years' experience, most probably with the Foresters. And we had a cook. I worked for the cook house when I was in the Foresters. Well, he asked me what experience I had. What I'd done before the war, I'd been a butcher, and I'd worked in the cook house. And we had a sergeant cook who'd worked in one of the big hotels in London as a pastry and sweet cook. And then we had another corporal, we called him Piggy Bacon. He'd been a chef in a long, well, cutter. He'd worked in the big hotel, one of the top rooms. He was a sergeant. He was a good cook as well. But Piggy Bacon, he had coal fires. And Piggy Bacon would never wash his hands when he built the fire up. He used to make the pastry. And his hands would be lovely and clean when he finished making the pastry. And we had a colonel come round one day, any complaints at dinner time. And he said to Piggy Bacon, "What's in there, my man?" And he said, "That's the rice pudding, sir." He said, "But it's got bloody pastry on it." He said, "I had a piece left." and he put the pastry crust on it on top of that, because the tins was about that size. And you'd have, 14 men, and you'd put meals up for 14 men in canisters, and one man would fetch it for the table because we were in this much. I said, and there's a bloody crust on it, man. I said, yes, sir, we have seen that. But, and he never washed his hands on it. So when you're cooking, you've got to keep a steady temperature. Well, the sardines are written. And we've got a fire piggy. Now I'll just put a couple of lumps on sand, and you just get a couple of lumps of coal and put them on, and go straight back into making bloody pie.
What did you think about that, having to eat that stuff afterwards?
Do you know, it's funny that you don't eat much in your cookout. Do you know what you do? You drink really sweet tea. And do you know how you used to eat at night, when we'd finished cooking and all cleaned up? Bread and treacle. And sweet tea. Nearly every night, that's what we got. We made it to ourselves, right? Because sometimes, if there was somebody on guard, if you had to prepare a meal for them, you know, was on guard. Well, after you got it prepared, it was left in the cookhouse, and whoever was skipping them would fetch it when they needed it. Porridge. We used to put porridge into the containers, fill it up with water, and it would be stood in a copper, cooking all night. Like a double, it would be a double saucer, and of course it was a copper with a big container inside. So that was ready for morning for breakfast. And that's, I ate very little when I was in the cookhouse.
And do you think that was a company cookhouse, or could it be in the...
Yeah, it was a company cookhouse. Just our, it was a platoon cookhouse, just for our platoon. Mm-hmm. When we was in the Hawkhurst.
And so, you said you were in Nissen Huts at Hawkhurst. What was the routine there for the Sherwood Foresters?
The Nissen Huts was, that's where you lived. Everybody had a bed space, and had palliasses.
And how many men would be in each hut?
About 20, 25. All on the floor. No tables in there. The only tables was only with where the sergeant had the sergeant sort of a little desk. Well, it was a table with a chair at the end of the back of the this one.
What about your platoon officer? Where would he be?
They was in the house. In Hawkhurst itself.
So that would be like an officer's mess?
Officer's mess, yeah.
And what kind of place was Hawkhurst? Was it a village or a town?
Well, it's a small village. Well, it's a little bit bigger than a village. It's in Kent. There was a Nephi, and there was also a Methodist Women's Circle, yeah, where we used to put food on pounds. There was a Salvation Army. And where they put food on for us. And once went into the Methodist place, and I had just enough money for a cup of tea. And by God, I was hungry. I don't know why I was so hungry. I was looking at these cakes, and this woman said, "What's up? Have you any money?" I said, "No." I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." So I thought, "Well, we're going off across to Sally Army." So I walked a bit down Curtin, down Hawkhurst High Street into the Sally Army. And when I got inside, she said, "No, lad, what's the matter?" Because they just sat down at the table like, and I said, "I've got money." And she said, "What do you want?" I said, "Well, I could eat some beans on toast." She said, "Well, you will eat some beans on toast. Have a cup of tea with it." And that was the only, you know, for nothing, but Sally Army. So I still give to Sally Army. And that is standing order with Sally Army for years. Only £6 a month. And I always sell a wood.
And you're in the Nissen Huts. Did you have any like prepared kind of positions at all in terms of, you know,
no,
anti invasion routine or?
No, but in our case we didn't do a lot at all. I sometimes see a bloke in Scumbag Mall was in the orchestra. He wasn't with our battalion, he wasn't with us. He came down later with a different battalion. But he said, "How did you pass your bloody time in the orchestra? With nothing to do." As I say, there was a Sally Army canteen sort of thing, and there's Methodist women's.
Were you troubled by air raids at Hawkhurst?
No.
Were there any incidents involving aircraft or...?
We saw very little. We knew about it in London being bombed and them sort of places, but we didn't get any.
What about any schemes at this stage of your career?
We did very few schemes. We did few schemes, but they were very few.
Can you remember anything about them with the foresters?
Just bloody marching half the time. That's all it was with the foresters. They always on the march. We did very, very few schemes when it came to, you know, going into the woods and things we've been doing in the Lincolns.
I think you mentioned off the tape an incident with umpires or so.
Well, that was a big scheme, but that included included the brigade.
Could you describe that?
I don't know what made the brigade up. It was foresters, with some inches.
I think the brigade would have been the foresters, the 16th DLI, and the 2nd and 5th Leicesters.
Was it Leicesters? Hampshires.
No, the division. I think the 46th Division, including the Hampshires.
I know there was all this lot.
Could you describe that big scheme then?
Well, we set off and I was accompanying a runner and a bicycle. And I got shot the first day. They brought us back to Yarm. They brought us back to Hawkhurst.
How could you describe that, the incident of how the...
Well, how I got shot. I was pushing my bicycle to go to company headquarters. I'd been out to one of the platoons with a message from HQ. I was just going back to HQ and I just got off my bicycle to go across a field sort of, you know, farm entrance, and this referee just came up and said, "You're shot," and he just put a red patch on there.
On your shoulder.
That was it.
What did
he said, "How about me back?" He said, "You're shot. What would you do if you were shot?" So I don't know what happened to that bike. I don't know. And then I got picked up by a 1500 weight truck and taken back to Hawkhurst.
And so you were out of the exercise.
I was out all the time, and it lasted nearly a week.
So the rest
it was a bloody good time, you know. It was only me and the cooks. Because when they had the scheme on, all the, like me in the cookhouse, or anybody else who was doing different jobs, they had to go on the scheme. The only people who were left behind was the cooks who was in the catering corps. They didn't go on schemes. They stopped at their base, at the cooking. So it was a bloody good time, it was okay. And one or two more filtered back the same way, you know. It was, bloody hell, Sullivan, how long have you been here? Oh, I came back on Monday.
Was there an incentive then to get yourself kind of...
Well, no, because we didn't know what happened if you got shot. Now, if we'd known, it didn't make any difference. If we'd known that when you got shot, you got taken back to company HQ, we would have known got shot. But they just... All he did was hit like that on my shoulder, he said, "You're shot." I said, "What about my bike?" He said, "What would you do if you got bloody shot, boy? You won't bother about a bike." Tell me about me left there.